You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Up next, we're featuring a special presentation of Unearthing the Buried History of Eastern Oregon's Chinese Cowboys. This is episode one in a new series by OPB's The Evergreen Podcast. It was created in collaboration with the Oregon Experience, the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, or SULA, and Jefferson Public Radio. This series features SULA director Chelsea Rose, whom our listeners will recognize as host of the Underground History podcast featured regularly here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Howdy, partners. When it comes to the mythology of the American West, one of the first images that comes to mind is the cowboy. Cowboys are some of America's most iconic symbols, thanks to Hollywood. They're cattle drivers and ranch hands with big dreams.
Give me 10 years and I'll have that brand on the gates of the greatest ranch in Texas.
They're tough guys that don't take no guff.
I hate rude behavior in a man. Won't tolerate it.
And they're as quick on the draw as they are on the range.
I don't know as I'd wear that hat too long around here, Mr. McKay.
Oh? Why not?
One of these wild cowboys might take it into his head to shoot it off you.
But like John Wayne, Tommy Lee Jones, and even the Marlboro Man, the cowboys people may see in their heads probably have one thing in common. They're all white guys. Real history tells a different story. Many American cowboys were black. Historians estimate 1 in 4, and black cowboy culture remains strong today. Some of the first Oregonian cowboys were Mexican vaqueros, whose presence dates back to the 1800s. In fact, the popular term buckaroo is just an anglicized pronunciation of vaquero. And out on the ranches and rangeland of eastern Oregon, there were Chinese cowboys, too.
We've connected Chinese immigrants to over 30 ranches so far and counting. The more we do this research, the more we're finding.
Among those looking for clues about the lives of Chinese buckaroos and ranch hands in eastern Oregon are people like Chelsea Rose.
Can you find me a spur? Somebody please find me a spur.
Who led a team of archaeologists on a dig at a historic ranch in Grant County. And Dale Holm, a retired forester and artist.
As I'm looking at this, I kind of like see this as a time capsule in a way, right? Things are still here. So, you know, I'm just imagining myself, if I were Buckaroo Sam or some of the other ranch hands, you know, they would be looking at the same hills.
They're both part of broader efforts by archaeologists and community historians to uncover and reclaim the little-known histories of Oregon's Chinese cowboys. From the Gert Boyle Studio, I'm Jen Chavez, and this is The Evergreen, a podcast from OPB about the place you call home. Like many aspects of Western history, what we've been taught by history books or the movies isn't the full story. So today on the show, we're kicking off a special series in collaboration with Oregon Experience, the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, and Jefferson Public Radio. Chelsea Rose joins us to talk all about unearthing Oregon history, the real stuff.
This has been a really important part of the story of ranching, which still really defines a lot of the identity of folks in eastern Oregon today. That's been erased or, you know, forgotten about.
Before eastern Oregon ever existed, the land where it now sits made up the homelands of indigenous people like the Umatilla, Cayuse, and Northern Paiute peoples. They were the original stewards of this land. They began to be forced off their land as European settlers arrived in the 1800s. The Lewis and Clark Expedition, the Oregon Trail, those histories are well known. But less well documented is the presence of people of Chinese descent in the pre-statehood and early statehood eras of Oregon's history. Early Chinese residents were among the first generations of non-indigenous people to settle in the region.
There were Chinese people settling across the state. it's not just concentrated in John Day and Portland and Jacksonville. It's everywhere.
Dr. Jennifer Feng is an independent historian and the director of exhibitions at the Wing Luke Museum in Seattle. She's studied and written extensively about the early Chinese diaspora in Oregon.
The census data tells us that in a lot of these places in the state, Chinese people made up a really significant portion of the overall population. So, like in Grant County in 1870, the total population comprised of 42% Chinese people.
Feng has helped share this history in collaboration with the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project, a grassroots multi-agency collaboration that focuses on documentation of early Chinese Oregonians in rural parts of the state. Joining her in that work is historical archaeologist Chelsea Rose, the director of the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, or SULA.
My specialty is the settlement and development of the American West, the gold rush, building railroads, development of the communities across the state.
Under the umbrella of the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project's work, Rose and others have learned more about not only the prevalence of early Chinese Americans in eastern Oregon, but what they did there.
We've been shocked to find not only the scale of these populations over time, but also the extent to which Chinese Americans were involved in industries far beyond what you hear about normally, which is, you know, railroads and mining.
In Grant County, Chinese folks were not only working in mining or running stores and laundries in historic Chinatowns in places like John Day. They were doing important work on ranches.
They were serving really critical roles as buckaroos and sheep herders and just ranch hands, even ranch foremen and cooks, you know, all these really critical parts of this ranching infrastructure.
This research led Rose and her team to historic Stewart Ranch, south of Dayville, Oregon, in a remote area of Grant County.
When I say remote, I mean every day we had an hour commute that felt like we were filming a four-wheel drive truck commercial.
It's a three-quarter ton pickup like this. With full-time four-wheel drive, it never forgets it's a tough truck.
The former ranch is on Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife land, what's now the Philip W. Schneider Wildlife Area. It's expansive western scenery, complete with wild horses. And the way its remoteness has protected it from the modern world makes it an archaeologist's dream.
So we're picking up something here. So it's telling me a buckle or a button or a bullet.
We knew right away that if we were really going to try to target the folks that were working on the ranch, we needed to find the bunkhouses. And so lucky for us, there's two bunkhouses that are preserved in this area.
Last July, archaeologists with SULA and ODFW teamed up for a summer field school to dig for artifacts and clues about the lives of real cowboys who lived and worked on this ranch. Cowboys like Buckaroo Sam.
Buckaroo Sam, I stumbled upon him on accident, and from the second I realized he was a Chinese cowboy, I was smitten and I just wanted to know more.
Through scattered documentation, researchers have been able to learn about the life of Buckaroo Sam, who's been tied to Stewart Ranch and other farms and ranches in the area. His 1935 obituary in the East Oregonian newspaper said he was, quote, considered one of the best horsemen and, quote, qualified as a real hand with his riding, roping, or any of the work of a Western cowhand.
This is somebody who was not a seasonal laborer. He was a cowboy by career. He was a buckaroo. And you can really see that his expertise was revered and respected.
He was known for always wearing a red bandana and for teaching others on the ranch how to roll a cigarette like a true cowboy.
There's even an account I found in a newspaper article from 1960 that was super exciting because it talked about Sammy Flynn, who was on the rodeo circuit. I think he was a bull rider or something. And somebody wrote in and said, you know, his name isn't Sammy. He got that nickname because as kids, we used to watch Buckaroo Sam at the rodeo in John Day.
You know, as I look around here and with the geology, you know, and I'm just imagining myself as being like Buckaroo Sam. it's a very warm feeling for me to be able to stand here and just kind of look around and imagine myself as one of these Chinese pioneers of the Western frontier.
Dale Holm spent over 30 years working for the U.S. Forest Service, which took him all around Oregon's great outdoors. As a Chinese American working in rural spaces, he found ways throughout his career to elevate histories of Chinese heritage in public and rural lands. This started early on when he noticed some of that history being improperly told in a national forest where he was working.
We approached a site where there was some interpretive signing that got me thinking, and it was kind of bogus, actually. The story was told from a very Eurocentric perspective.
He got interested in learning more, helping to correct the record. He advocated for the protection of heritage sites.
Everywhere that I've worked, whether it was in Alaska, Washington State, Oregon, or Idaho, I saw evidence of Chinese pioneers.
When he retired from the Forest Service, he began spending more time on making art. He's also an advisory member of the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Projects Board. In 2021, Holm published a short comic called They Called Him Buckaroo Sam in an issue of Oregon Historical Quarterly about Oregon's Chinese diaspora. He drew inspiration from newspaper clippings, oral histories, and photographs to imagine what life was like for Chinese cowboys like Buckaroo Sam on the farms and ranches of Grant County and in Chinese immigrant communities in John Day or Canyon City.
There was only one image that I could find of Buckaroo Sam in his later years. So I had to reimagine him as a younger man. And then I would have to imagine, because the records aren't there, right? You know, where and when did he come to the United States, to America? So many of his countrymen were coming from, you know, what we call the old Toisan area. And he probably spoke that dialect of Chinese Cantonese, right? And so there are some things that I just made some assumptions on. So that helped me then to kind of personalize, you know, Buckaroo Sam in order for me to then create the story.
By imagining Buckaroo Sam as a representative of other Chinese American cowboys of his era, Dale helped give them more visibility than they've had in many years. He also created a more humanized view than what was presented in the historical record.
It was really important not to use caricatures, you know, caricatures that you would typically find in 1930. So, you know, I was just very conscious about making sure that facial features and so forth were somewhat realistic and accurate to what he looked like in that one single photo.
It just really reinforces the importance of a Chinese American artist having an opportunity to depict this person, because past depictions of him have been filtered through a really racialized gaze.
Through resurfacing histories of Chinese Americans like Buckaroo Sam, folks like Dale Holm and Chelsea Rose are expanding the view of who cowboys were.
The image of the American West, you know, and what a cowboy was, and that sort of thing, it's pretty strong in Western American culture. And it's kind of a retelling of a story, you know, and the more we can find out, the greater it expands what it means, you know, to be an American and be an American cowboy here out in the West.
Coming up after a break, what artifacts uncovered by archaeologists on Stewart Ranch tell us about some of the other Chinese ranch workers in Grant County, and why resisting the erasure of Chinese American histories in rural spaces is more important than ever.
You're listening to Unearthing the Buried History of Eastern Oregon's Chinese Cowboys. This is episode one, which is part of a special series of Unearthing Oregon History by OPB's The Evergreen Podcast, featuring Chelsea Rose. We'll continue this episode after a short break. You're listening to The Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Before the break, Chelsea Rose introduced us to the story of Buckaroo Sam in this episode titled Unearthing the Buried History of Eastern Oregon's Chinese Cowboys. This project is a collaboration between OPB, the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, and Jefferson Public Radio. Now let's get back to the story.
It's hard to tell until I actually get it cleaned up and I can look at the head stamp, but it's within our period of occupation.
On a hot, dusty day in July, Chelsea Rose and a team of archaeologists are getting their hands dirty, digging for artifacts among the sites of bunkhouses and a cookhouse on the historic Stewart Ranch.
So probably from like a lever-action rifle, possibly a revolver, that kind of deal. Oh, that is definitely a pistol cartridge. Casing. Potentially some sort of .32 caliber deal, but likely a revolver. What do you got there? Willowware?
Yep.
Cut bone.
This dig is just the beginning of work to learn more about the lives of the cowboys and workers who lived on this ranch.
Just to start, what we're finding is, buttons that reflect workwear.
Definitely a distinct style of, the blue jeans, so that's really interesting to see.
If we find a pearl snap button, I will die happy.
Katie Johnson, Rose's colleague at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, has helped interpret some of the artifacts found there.
Canning jar.
This is the zinc lid liner to this canning jar, probably.
And this is a cut rib from a medium-sized mammal, which would be consistent with deer or the sheep.
They're not only looking for clothing or ammunition, they're also looking for things related to food.
You would expect, one of our research questions is what are they eating on the ranch? So here we are answering it, the stews. They're canning peaches or apples. There's an apple tree right there.
And so this site is interesting because not only do we have records of a Chinese cowboy, but also the Chinese cook.
That cook was named Jim Lee.
Jim Lee was another individual that we've traced over time to several ranches, including the Stewart Ranch. So when we started finding a lot of the food remains at the ranch, that was very exciting to me because then we're getting really in the territory of Jim Lee's kitchen.
In an oral history by Eminger Stewart, grandson and namesake of the Stewart Ranch's founder, he described Lee as a, quote, really, really good cook, particularly good with desserts. Rose says some accounts suggest he was great at making biscuits. Johnson at Sula is a zooarchaeologist, meaning her expertise in animal bones can help decode some of the food remains found around the area of the ranch's former cookhouse.
Right off the bat, you can see that you're looking at maybe communal meals. So a lot of times the lower limb elements are they're a tougher meat, so you would have put them into like stews or soups where you can make a large portion and then share that with the group that's working there.
There were also beef and deer bone fragments and cuts from a medium-sized mammal that could represent sheep. It's reported that mutton was one of Jim Lee's signature dishes.
There is a large amount of food represented here. This is in addition to any fresh vegetables that they would have been obtaining, canned foods and goods, preserved items brought in. Based on that, I would say that even though they're not eating prime cuts of meat every night, they are getting a nice diet.
Those canning jars, along with pieces of ceramic willowware and Chinese brown glazed stoneware, or CBGS.
I think this is CBGS.
Oh my God, you guys.
Provide more clues about the ranch's kitchen.
Good job. Okay, let's find more.
Okay, we'll find the rest of the vessel.
Rose says while this is some great preliminary evidence to work with, this is only the beginning.
Really, to get us to a place where we can start making some definitive statements about the experience of Chinese American cowboys, we're going to need several more sites. So the search continues. We're at the stage where we have more questions than answers, but it's really exciting to start to refine the kind of questions we can ask.
The archaeologists are hoping to compare these finds with evidence from places like the historic John Day Chinatown. It's home to the Kam Wa Chung State Heritage Site, which includes a preserved building that was once a business run by a general store proprietor and an herbalist. But in terms of archaeology, there's so much more to be found there. Rose says they've begun to be able to rebuild a picture of what the Fuller Chinatown was like, and that recovered letters suggest that some Chinese cowboys and ranch workers were living there in the off-season.
We can start to really get a sense of these men's lives. What was life like when they were out on the ranch and living with other people? And what was life like when it was off-season and they were back home?
What's known about the stories of Jim Lee and Buckaroo Sam place them both in John Day. Buckaroo Sam retired there when he got too old for the cowboy life. Tragically, he lost his home and savings in a catastrophic fire in 1927.
After that fire, he was destitute, and some of the colleagues and friends he made working on these ranches, he was able to leverage that. He moved into the Benson Hotel, and he lived with that family for the remainder of his life, mostly.
The hotel owner's granddaughter, Lois Phillips, speaks fondly of him in an oral history, describing how he helped the family and took particular care to watch out for her. As for Jim Lee, cooking on ranches was just the beginning of a storied career as a restaurant cook and owner in Grant and Baker counties.
He had a noodle house in John Day in the teens that he bought from another man named Sam Key. He had a noodle and chop suey house in Prairie City, which is just a little bit to the east. He owned some kind of restaurant in Baker City. I can't remember what that was called. And I think he had a place in Canyon City called the Nugget Restaurant.
His restaurants got positive write-ups in several newspapers. He was respected and renowned as a local chef.
It moves him beyond the realm that a lot of times early Chinese immigrants are kind of pigeonholed into as this unskilled labor force. And so, you know, when you really take the time and take care to tell these stories of these men, you can start to really fill in the gaps and recognize careers and, you know, lived experience that was far beyond this unnamed, unskilled, you know, generic, monolithic Chinese experience that's often portrayed in history books.
All in all, the presence of early Chinese Americans in Eastern Oregon clearly had a huge impact on the ranching industry and local economies. For example, Rose says that the founder of one historic ranch in Grant County that still exists, the Oliver Ranch, got his start working at a ranch owned by Chinese immigrants.
It really shows how this story, it goes all the way to the top. You know, it's so exciting to think about, you know, this is what the American West really was, and it's not what we've learned about and been fed in these history books.
But why aren't these histories more well known?
We now have found evidence of Chinese communities or individuals or business owners or laborers pretty much everywhere across the state. And that really starts to raise a lot of other questions. And the biggest one it raises for me is, what happened? How did that erasure happen? How are their stories, how have their stories been lost over time?
Dr. Jennifer Fang thinks this erasure happened in stages.
So on one hand, you have erasure through like legislation, through anti-Chinese legislation, immigration restrictions, these types of things, which, you know, significantly shrunk or like slowed down the growth of this population, but also created this economically, politically, socially marginalized underclass. And then on top of that, there is this additional erasure that happens through the production and reproduction of historical knowledge. So like how scholarship about this community or this, you know, this region has developed. That production and reproduction of knowledge oftentimes, you know, either just ignored this population or it diminished the contributions of these individuals, or it misinterpreted these individuals and their experiences through either, you know, like a Eurocentric or an Orientalist lens.
Decades of anti-Chinese sentiment deterred or prohibited, in some cases violently, many Chinese Americans from building generational roots. While census records for Grant County listed more than 40% of its population as being of Chinese descent in the 1870s, in 2020, that dropped to less than 1% reporting Asian ancestry. That's part of what's allowed whitewashed, incomplete histories of Eastern Oregon to flourish. like the ones promoted by the Bundys, who staged an armed occupation of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge 10 years ago this month.
You know, a lot of the rhetoric that was really present during that standoff was like, we're preserving this traditional way of life. We're preserving, you know, history. We want, things should need to be how they always were. And of course, not only does that sideline the indigenous experience and you know, history in these places, but there's a lot of other parts of, you know, the population that are erased in that rhetoric as well, like Chinese Americans.
Rose says these days, people write their own narratives of the world, but that's not a new problem.
When you look at the way that history and people that didn't fit into somebody's narrative of history have been sidelined and overwritten over time, it starts to kind of put into perspective how you've always had to fight to find the truth. And that's always, I think, a responsibility of us as good citizens, as thoughtful people, to think critically and to ask questions and to hold ourselves accountable to wanting to know the real story of the places that we live and the spaces we inhabit.
In Oregon, the reclamation of Chinese American history is happening. Dale Holm sees it.
You know, I think for community members, that some of them have forgotten this history. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing is also kind of reintroducing the subject to the folks that live here in this Grant County about this rich history.
Jennifer Fang does too.
This group of people were a fundamental part of Oregon's past. Chinese people helped make Oregon into what it is today. In a number of different ways. Like, it's not just they built the railroad. It's not just they had a Chinatown. Like, it's they existed in, like, so many different ways.
And for archaeologist Chelsea Rose, how that history is framed matters.
One of the things that I think is really an important opportunity for archaeology is to be able to recognize the presence of Chinese Americans and to document their experience outside of the documentary record, which during this era is primarily comprised of all of the things that they couldn't do and all of the terrible things that were said about them and happened to them. So this is a way that we can really focus on their agency and the decisions they made and their strength and creativity and all the ways that they survived despite all this other stuff that was happening to become really influential Oregonians.
To learn more about the history of Chinese cowboys and ranch workers in Eastern Oregon, check out Chelsea Rose's great article and video collaboration with Christy Goshi for OPB's Oregon Experience. You can find those at opb.org, and we'll link to them in our show notes. And a special shout out to the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology and to our partner station, Jefferson Public Radio, where Rose hosts the podcast Underground History. Check it out at ijpr.org. Stay tuned for more from Chelsea Rose about unearthing Oregon history in the months to come. Thank you for listening to The Evergreen, our podcast from OPB about the place you call home. I produced this episode, and our technical director is Stephen Cray. The OPB podcast team also includes Mia Estrada, Julie Sabatier, and Sage Van Wang, Chelsea Rose, Christy Goshi, Alan Joe, Dave Miller, and I did the interviews you heard. You heard clips from the Westerns, Red River, Lonesome Dove, and The Big Country. Music in this episode comes from Audio Network. And if you have a question for us, please reach out. Email us at theevergreen@opb.org. I'm Jen Chavez. Happy trails.
Well, Well, that's all the time we have. You just heard episode one of a new series, Unearthing Oregon History, featuring Chelsea Rose. She's the director of Southern Oregon University's Laboratory of Anthropology. This project was produced in partnership with OPB and JPR.